Morioka voor Nicholson. En dit is een schietkans en dit is een geweldige goal. Geweldige goal voor Charleroi van Nicholson. Hij heeft buskruid in dat rechterbeen.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. I believe this is episode 18. My name is Ben Jackson and as always I'm your host. And this week, as always again, I'm joined by our very own Bongonda and Nazon of the podcast, Scott and Yaris. How are you guys doing?
Finally back. It felt like ages. Let's actually just dive straight in because we've got a lot to cover.
Absolutely. It feels like ages since we just last did one of these, even though I think it's only been like 2 weeks, but those international breaks just feel like a lifetime. But they're done for now. Sorry, Scott, I'm not sure if we heard from you, but you good as well?
Yeah, I'm great. I think I've missed everyone as much as they seem to have missed us.
And hopefully you can hear the quality of Scott's new mic. I know we put up a thing about that, but yeah, I hope you're enjoying the clarity with which you can hear him. So yeah, as always in this episode, we're just going to run through some games of the week. Yosh is going to give us a little more of an overview of like some stuff that happened. We've actually got quite a lot of news to round up. Quite a lot of things have happened. Some quite sad things that we'll definitely touch on, which some of you may know about, some of you may not. But yeah, we'll get into that and some other areas of interest. And then we'll just literally skim over some upcoming fixtures. Yeah, so I'll just quickly do a run through of results before we dive straight into our games of the week. So we started off with a pretty entertaining 2-2 draw between Standard Liège and Eupen. Standard Liège equaliser we're definitely going to have to talk about. We then had Oostend drawing 1-1 with Antwerp. Cercle, they won 2-0 against Vaarsland Beveren. Club Brugge got a 1-0 win against Kortrijk. Beerschots beat Anderlecht 2-1. Mechelen beat Zolder Waregem 2-1. Gent managed to keep a clean sheet and win 1-0 against Charleroi. Genk put 4 past the returning Musclon and that ended up 4-1. And then on Monday night, we had a 2-2 draw with Leuven against St. Truiden, and at the time of recording, Vaarsland Beveren have just beaten Oostend 2-0. Scott, which one of those was your game of the week?
Well, I went for, ended up going for one that I didn't expect to. Leuven's 2-2 draw against St. Truiden last night. It was my game of the week. Really good game, played at a great tempo, competitive and even. And when I say even, it doesn't get much more even than 49.9% for Leuven to 50.1% possession for St. Truiden. Really nice game, both teams really going for it. Very physical, as most games in the Belgian League are, as we know. Really interesting first half, actually. I think, you know, St. Truiden really effective with their pressing. Leuven allowed kind of St. Truiden to kind of press them quite high up, and they got a lot of joy from that, particularly coming from Duckins Nazon, who I'll touch on in a minute, because he's actually my player of the week. I think St. Truiden will feel really unlucky, probably, not to have won this. They really should have nicked it. They missed two huge chances in the second half when kind of Nazon was going for his hat trick and missed a real sitter, as did Filipov as well. So both of them are obviously going for miss of the week. St. Truiden were causing Leuven all sorts of problems down their right hand side in that game, and that was largely down to Nazon, who I'll move on to. Of course, most people know he's St. Truiden's Haitian midfielder. Really good game, did all the dirty stuff really well, winning headers, sticking his foot in, you know, winning his 50-50s, 6 shots on target in the game, you know, two goals, 65% pass rate, just over 60% shot accuracy. Physically really, really good as well, imposed himself in the game really, really well. Kind of interesting actually, because I think he's got 4 goals now in 7 games for St. Truiden, but he's only started 3 of the 7 games that he's kind of featured in. I think after that performance, we'll probably see him starting kind of more often. I noticed within the first 5 minutes, I thought, oh, hello, he's up for this, because he's firing in with kind of tackles and really remonstrating with the referee as well. So he was well pumped up, but in the right way. Good game, unexpectedly a good game. And Duckins Nazon, yeah, my player of the week.
Before we move on from Nazon, quite an interesting player, actually, when you look at his like career history. He's kind of played he's had quite a random career, I guess we could probably say. Like, was at Lorient in France. He spent a bit of time in India with Kerala Blasters. Spent a bit of time at Wolves. Been loaned out to Coventry City, Oldham Athletic. A bit of time at St. Mirren as well. And now back from loan after being on loan at St. Mirren with St. Truiden. And Yeah, like his stats are really good, like you were saying. And just looking on the FootMob app, he's like his minutes per goal is 73 minutes, which is pretty decent, I'd say. Like if you're doing it every 73 minutes, you're getting a goal. It's pretty nice, especially being a winger. Yeah, and he just looked quite clinical, didn't he, yesterday? Like his finishes were really nice. He gives them something that they've needed, I think. Like they have been struggling this season. And I know, Joris, you spoke to us, like you were speaking to Stair a bit about how you think Muscat might, at the end of this week, be back on the hot seat. So he's probably going to be relying on Nazon quite a bit going forward if he can like replicate these performances and stuff.
Yeah, I think so indeed. And also, yeah, it was just, he was provoking Breas, also a nice, well, not really nice thing to see, but the Breas obviously was is a former coach of Sint-Truiden and of Douglas Nazon. And after his first goal, he really went to the two Breas and gave him some signs and also received a yellow card for that. Like, see, you should have played me more. I can do it. You should have believed in me. Good game from him, for sure.
It was nice to see Mark Bryce come out actually after that. I think in his post-match, when he was actually asked about Nazon winding him up, and although he did get booked by the referee, he did say that he appreciated the spirit in which that was intended. I think he obviously quite likes to see that in players, and he felt it was on the right side of a wind-up. So it was actually nice to see, because normally, you know, things get a bit kind of overheated and entrenched, but it's nice to hear a coach come out and say, yeah, I quite like to see an ex-player kind of come and wag his finger in my face.
It got quite a bit tetchy on the sidelines as well. I think there was a moment where Suzuki was saying something to Pierce as well. So Pierce was getting stuck in as well to some of the players. And we're going to speak about him later. It's good to see a player kind of, I guess there's like a line that can be crossed there, and I'm sure Bongonda would probably love to do the same to if they played against Copenhagen at any point. Moving on, I'm going to take my game of the week now. I'm going to use my privilege as the presenter to just jump in front of Joris, but Joris has got a lot more interesting things to say than me, I'm sure. So my game of the week was Beerschot against Anderlecht. Yeah, typical Beerschot fashion. Well, actually not typical Beerschot fashion, but typical in the sense that it was an entertaining game, but not so typical in that they were actually quite solid defensively, which was quite surprising, given that usually they just leak goals, but smash goals in at the other end. First goal from Koulibaly was a really, really good finish. Just kind of like arrived onto the ball. Nice little touch taken away from defender and absolutely smashed it home. Kiefer might have done a little bit better, but yeah, the power he hit it was quite nice. That put them 1-0 up. And yeah, Talik Tisudali was he was just brilliant on the ball. His dribbling was causing Anderlecht so many problems at the back. Like, their defending wasn't great in this game. Yeah, they really struggled to deal with him. He won a penalty that Rafa Holzhauser finished off. They did get back into the game later on. Lucas Nemecha got a goal, but they couldn't quite get the equaliser. I think one of the big takeaways from this game, and I know that we spoke about it while it was happening, was Anderlecht still trying to play out from the back. And I get that it's what Kompany wants to do, but it's really, really hard to watch, even as a neutral. Like, I can't imagine Anderlecht fans are enjoying watching it either. Like, it's just very stressful the way they're trying to play out from the back, and it's like sometimes it works, and when it doesn't and they're under pressure, you're just like, you can see the panic starting to kick in, and you're just waiting for them to give the ball away. And more often than not, they do give the ball away. And against a side like Beerschot as well, who are very good at attacking, it's just, you're kind of asking for trouble, really. And like, yeah, I saw that Matt Miazga ended up in one of those flop of the week teams of the week, but they did it with just the flops, which we don't do. We're just doing like good teams of the week. We don't want to like hammer players. But when they signed Miazga, I think I said on this podcast, like, he's a good defender, but I don't think he's the best at playing it out from the back. I don't think that plays to his strengths. And you can kind of see that already with like the way that they play it out from the back. I don't know if you guys agree with me on that, but I just don't think, I think they need to mix it up more. Like, it's fine to do it every now and then, but I think if you're concentrating on just doing it, I think it kind of restricts, it takes away some of like players' decision-making freedom, because they're being told this is what you have to do every time, and that's when you run into trouble and lose the ball quite a bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think the question is, do they have the players at the back to do that, to be honest? I mean, wanting to play that way is kind of fine. And I think, you know, Anderlecht are actually one of the better passing sides in the league generally. So there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to do this with more effectiveness. But I think you're right, there's a kind of collective nervousness when they do try to do that. And Company's going to persevere with this because it's the way he wants to play, and I think that's kind of fair enough. But yeah, they don't look as comfortable at doing that as some other sides do, and that kind of tells me with their body language when you look at it that they're not completely comfortable with that being the kind of standard preset either. So I suppose they just need to kind of keep an eye on it. I think Beerschot pressed them really well actually, as they do as a good attacking side, and I think that nervousness came right from the start, actually. They weren't allowed a chance to settle Anderlecht. Yeah, they just kind of need to keep an eye on it. I was saying last time we were kind of talking that I thought there were some signs of improvement from Anderlecht, and I think that's still the case, although I don't think they played very well at the weekend there, which probably had more to do with the fact, let's give Beerschot the credit for that. They were very good again, and they did what they did well and took them out.
No, definitely. I think one Anderlecht player I definitely want to touch on who... Like, it wasn't like his best ever game, but Sammy Lokonga in the middle, I just love the way he transitions them from defence to attack. Sorry, and just looking at the stats, like, he was the most fouled player in that game, and I feel like from just like memory when watching it is because he just drives the ball forward, and he's just quite good at running with it. That they just have to, like, teams are just fouling him and taking him out. And I think if they want to play that game, like that passing it out from the back, they need to make sure that somehow it gets into his feet quicker, because then he can just pick it up and take it forward and kind of like drag them up the pitch rather than like sitting deep and like playing it around like fiddly. It's like, right, no, let's get it into the conga and let's let him push us forward. Because yeah, I think he's showing signs of being a really, really good player. And I think he may not have, like I said, it wasn't his best ever game, but I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, I like the way you're doing this. And there's certain things I like how you're doing, and you look like a very good prospect for the future, which Anderlecht, like recently, they've had quite a few good young players.
Yeah, I also feel sorry for one Anderlecht player, namely goalkeeper Willem Reuter, who had to stand in because Van Kondrijk is injured. I think he's back on the field now, but he was out for the weekend still. And he actually saved the penalty from Holzhauser. Mm-hmm. He didn't go straight in. He saved it, but, well, unfortunately, the rebound got in. And also, he was a bit unlucky with the first goal. Yeah, I just wanted to highlight him. Yeah, he actually played quite a decent game. And also, maybe like, even the game could have gone differently because Anderlecht, in the end, got quite some chances. They hit inside of a post as well, where Van Habel got lucky or unlucky. Choose whichever side you're on, but that he didn't hit his back and fell in the goal then, but bounced out at the other side. And yeah, also a few chances. Yeah, actually Anderlecht scored in after the 18th minute now, so that's also a reverse of what we're used to. But in the end, yeah, they couldn't really put a second away, but they were threatening in the last minute, so it's some kind of change at least.
No, definitely. That one that could have gone in off the back of the post, like, he's so lucky that he got out of the way of that. Because if he had, he kind of like shimmied forward, didn't he? And if he hadn't done that, it would have hit him and probably gone in. So, do we call that great goalkeeping? I'm not sure. Or just luck, I guess. So, just quickly on my player of the week. Yeah, I went for EK Ugwo of Cercle Brugge. I think just because, mainly because I think he's just like such a useful player for them in terms of just as a pure finisher. So, like, he only had two shots on Saturday, and he scored two goals. He's just exactly what that team needed this season. And I just love that clinical nature of him. Two really nice finishes as well. Slightly lucky with one of them, but like his positioning is quite encouraging and stuff like that. And yeah, I think after the game, Paul Clement came out and was like, it was a really, really difficult game against Vazel and Beveland. It wasn't easy. They had to really work hard and stuff. So I think even that kind of made me even more leaning towards Ugbo being the difference in that game. And I think that's what Clement was saying. It was a lot more even than people might have expected. Although I do have a slight issue with Anthony Musaba being given the assist for the first goal. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there is no way that he deliberately does what he does to give Ugbo the ball. Like, the cross comes in, it kind of like hits Musaba and just drops to Ugbo, who just like puts it home. But I've seen Musaba being given the assist on a couple of apps. It's like just a miscontrol that leads to it. So I don't know. That's a like mini rant, I guess, for me this week about if we're going to give out assists, let's make sure they're actual assists and not just because they hit someone and ended up at the feet of a teammate and he scored. I think there's got to be some sort of deliberate attempt to pass it or do something with it. Yeah, that's my rant over. Joris, let's dive to you and you can kind of give us a bit more of like a interesting point you saw over the other games this week.
Of course. Also, I'm actually also already a bit afraid of Ugbo because he's playing Genk next week, and Genk always give away create some chances. So if he's that clinical, Kink might have some problem at the back. But well, we'll see about that. Okay, but actually, I wanted just to point out a few things again that recurred in over the weekend. Actually, maybe the main theme will be it's all about just a few minutes. The first game I will touch on is Standard and Eupen. Actually, this could be my game of the week, but because you will see them recurring in this small feature of me as well. But they scored in consecutive minutes. Eupen was actually playing well, but Standard scored around the half hour mark, a bit past it. The opening goal, but Eupen already recovered 1 minute later with an equalizer, which is a feat that also was repeated later that day by Oostende and Antwerp in their game. Oostende scored around the 80th minute and before Rafailov struck the equalizer home. Another aspect of this all about minutes thing, returning to Standard and Eupen, there's the idiocy of Shamir, a Standard player, who actually received two yellow cards in 2 minutes. Well, actually, I have to correct myself. He got a yellow card, which already could have been a red card. And 1 minute later, he first got a second yellow, which later on by VAR was overturned into a straight red card. Well, 1 minute later, which was quite stupid. Okay. Yeah. His intentions probably were not there, but okay, it was at least that second yellow. And well, I actually feel like the first foul yellow card was deserved more the red card straight away already than the actual foul that he got it for. But either way, it was idiotic to go into a challenge that even without the intentions in that such risky challenge 1 minute after you received a yellow card already. Yeah, again, more specific about minutes, again, staying at the same game. There was the Bodar blunder at the beginning of the injury time, or maybe straight before, that led to what we thought was the 1-3 and seal for Eupen and sealing their victory. But he got lucky and the goal was disallowed. And 5 minutes later, well, it's always nice when something like this happens. He actually scored at the other end. He scored, the goalkeeper scored the equalizer for Standard, which then, well, they celebrated a bit too much for being an equalizer against Eupen. But, well, remember, they played more than a half with a man down and also, well, got behind. So yeah, that was always nice to see a goalkeeper scoring. It's also not the first time people outside of Belgium might maybe remember Bolat's goal while he was goalkeeping at Standard in the Champions League against AZ Alkmaar. I believe it was in 2009. That actually allowed them to proceed to the Europa League in that season. And then another idiotic, well, not challenge, but feat was Charleroi coach Belosin, who received twice yellow in the 94th minute of the game. Yeah, for complaining against the referee. And well, while it's already stupid to take it once as a coach, he kept on complaining and he still just got a second yellow while the game was already over and already lost and got suspended because of that, which is, of course, not really a good example if you want your players to play smart as well. Yeah, and then I also got a few more random facts also, or had a feeling. I personally am getting annoyed with Holzhauser's attempt for scoring an Olympic goal. He's been scoring straight from a corner. Yeah,
he has been shooting every single time. Like, I bet he's just, oh, sorry, lads, I'm just overhitting it. There's no way. Like, every time they got a corner, it's like, oh, he's having a pop. Like, it's like he just sees any sort of like dead ball situation as a chance to shoot.
Which, of course, does earn them a lot of points. Yeah, I'm getting annoyed with it. He hit the bar twice, I believe, as well, even in this game. But hitting the bar is like something that many people will be able to do, but getting that last touch. But now everyone also knows the gimmick is over. Yeah. People know you will try. Maybe in the end something, I'm sure at some point it will actually happen somehow. But like now the chances are actually decreasing by every attempt because everyone is like taking measurements against it, I guess.
I was just going to say, guys, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's very difficult to hold it against him. I know what you're saying, Joris, but because he's capable of such brilliance and has been consistently pretty brilliant, apart from a couple of sort of big games, it's very difficult to hold that against him because it's such a big part of his game. But I know what you mean. It's as frustrating as it is entertaining when it comes off.
Bishop may as well like not put any players in the box, which would A, like, solve their defensive problems because they'd have everyone back. So, like, they can literally just be like, okay, mate, you're just going to shoot. We'll leave, like, Tissadali and Suzuki in the box and everyone else just get back and defend. I think it'd be a great idea because you know what's going to happen. Like, they, as a defender, you're going up every time. I bet they're just like, oh, here we go. Our one yeah. chance to go forward and maybe find the net, and we've got old Rafa putting that in swingers onto the crossbar every time.
On the other hand, maybe that's a tactic. They want everyone to believe that, it will, that he will always try it, and then when he doesn't, then everyone's free for goal. So
that,
who knows?
That one time in a game that they're gonna, that one game this season, he doesn't try it.
We need to be watching those, you know, those indecipherable hand signals that players make when they're taking corners, which are always a signal as to where they're going to put it. But of course, the signals are different depending on, you know, who they're communicating with and what the side is. So we'll need to keep an eye on that for the next few weeks to see just where he puts the ball, but also what was the signal he made before the ball comes in.
So yeah, should we pay attention or not? Yeah, and also actually, yeah, well, while we're on these goals, Westerlo in second division actually managed to score twice this month, I believe.
They have
such from a straight corner. So well,
he's just an influencer now, isn't he? Really, he's just
maybe. Yeah, and then I have two small facts about Genk as well. So Bongonda, who's been performing well lately, has scored 7 goals in 4 games, which is already impressive enough on itself, but apparently he's also the first player to score a brace in 3 consecutive games since 2009. I know I've talked at length about Hannon already finally being back. He also got his first start in 365 days, one day less than a full year because of 2020 is a, I don't know the word in English for that, but the year with a day extra. Against it, was the interesting feat was that it was against the same opponent, so he fell out with an injury at Mouscron Koun in 2019, and now he played his first start at game from the start against them as well, 365 days later.
Not a bad little stat, that of all the chances for that to happen, that is crazy. And I think, yeah, you're right to talk about Bongonda. He just looks very calm, doesn't he, in front of goal at the moment. He looks very like confident. But I would just like
Although I'm still very not really, he made up for it, but I'm still confused what he tried to do in the first minute of the second half when he was alone on goal. Tried some very weak lobbing of Coffey, who was not in the right position either. I think he thought he was offside, but we've bent over this, then please just shoot it in and you'll see if it
exactly.
is or not.
Oh, but yes.
Later on, he scored twice, so he made up for it for sure.
And just quickly before we go to break, I know people are probably wondering what we thought about Mouscron. I think I spent the first half counting how many touches they got in the box, and they got more in the first half than they had, than their average for the season. And they got a fourth goal of the season, so things were improving. It was a tough game for them to come back to, I think. But yeah, I thought they looked better. See how that goes. They're playing, as of recording, they're playing tomorrow night, so Wednesday night, against Cercle Brugge. So we'll see how they get on there. We'll quickly take a break. And when we get to the other side, there's plenty of news for us to go over and a couple of fixtures coming up that we want to talk about. So we'll speak to you guys in a few seconds. Welcome back to the second half of episode 18 of the Belgian Football Podcast. And we have actually got a ton of news to go over. We won't try to be too long, but yeah, there's definitely some talking points. I think we're going to start, I kind of alluded to it in the first part, about the contract that Mark Beers has signed at Leuven. I don't know which one of you guys wants to jump in on this, but personally, I think that's a great move for them. I know we spoke a bit about him being linked, or the idea of him being linked with the Genk job, but that never really looked like it was possible. It looked like he's quite happy where he is. Initial thoughts, guys, what do you think? I personally think it's quite a good move for Leuven. I think it's probably quite a good move for him. He gets to stay and keep building that team. Definitely trending in the right direction under him.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm not sure there's too much to say about it. I mean, we know that he reportedly turned down the Genk job because he was happy at Leuven. And then within a matter of hours, agents are doing their thing and picking up the phone to kind of use that as leverage for a new contract. I don't think it's a coincidence that it happened, you know, sort of 24, 48 hours afterwards. Yeah, I mean, I think it's the right call. I, you know, it didn't need to necessarily happen just now, but sometimes these things just have have a way of developing like that, you know, and turning down a job, then, you know what I mean, part of it is, okay, let's secure you for a bit longer, because obviously the interest is there. So yeah, I think it's a good move for Leuven, and he's happy there. So, you know, if he's staying, then it'd be interesting to see what the terms of that, you know, are. Obviously it's improved terms as well as an extension to the deal. Yeah, it's a move that certainly makes sense, I think.
Yeah, what stands out for me is, like, he's only been at the job since this year, actually, so it's really soon to give this sign of confidence from both sides.
Yeah, I think, yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, like, he isn't the man that got them promoted. Well, technically, he's not the man. Technically, they wouldn't have got promoted, but that's a whole other story that we don't want to get into. For the first leg of the playoff, it wasn't him that was in charge. He was put in charge for the second leg of the playoff, which then was irrelevant anyway. So yeah, this is kind of his first real season there with them. Yeah, no, definitely interesting. Good for them. Be interesting to see how they get on going forward. And yeah, they're definitely trending in the right direction, as I said. To less positive news, I guess. There's one team within these teams that I definitely want to talk a little bit more about, is the releasing of club accounts, some Pro League club accounts. They release their financial accounts and stuff. And Standard Liège is the club I kind of want to talk about, because from like some reports and stuff that I read, and I think some information that you guys gave to me as well, there's this thing about them, the wages that they're paying players is like up there with Club Brugge. And that just baffles me personally, because the quality of that team just isn't, it's just not great. I don't think that their team's good enough to warrant those large wages personally. I don't know if you want to talk about like the release, talk around Genk as well. I know that you've put that down on our notes for this episode, but yeah, if you guys have a similar opinion to me on Standard, I presume, like, it's just a bit concerning that they're paying these quite high wages.
They took the gamble of investing big for future returns, but well, so far these returns haven't come, so they will need to improve soon already anyway. And well, indeed, their financial situation is quite dire, especially now with also Van Heuze, which is probably their best prospect, yeah, out. He won't be making them any money soon. I don't know exactly how it went with the licensing last year, but they already had issues there and they got it at the last instance. But I think there were some promises there as well of player capital. That will be worth something for them in the future. Of course, this injury then is a definite blow for that. And I don't know. I hope everything will be fine. I know they're one of the main rivals of Genk, but of course, we want to have the rival to play against.
Yeah.
So, although, of course, I'm all for clubs being punished for financial mismanagement, but yeah, still, you don't want to lose them completely.
And there's the issue with Standard is it's kind of a perfect storm in a way. Obviously, they were expecting some reasonably major investment, which fell through as well. And, you know, if I was in the position of being on the verge of investing, I would be pulling out, looking at those figures as well. I mean, I think there's a couple of things here that strike me. One is obviously the investment in wages that Joris was talking about was taken with the assumption that there would be some big player sales, which haven't happened, and at the moment aren't looking like they're going to happen for reasons out with their control. They've had some bad luck with injuries since the start of the season as well. You know, all clubs have been hit by the virus, which has massively reduced their revenue in different ways, which has been a factor in this. But I think as of today, the way I understand it is that Standard are looking at needing something in the region of 50 million euros in order to make sure that they secure their license for next season. I think they'll get one. I mean, I don't think it's really under threat, but, you know, strictly according to the rules and the way things are at the moment, it's pretty bad. There's no new investors on the horizon as well. Yeah, it's a perfect storm, and the exact opposite of obviously Genk's situation, where there was a series of really high profile successful player sales. You know, the best accounts for any Belgian side ever, and correct me if I'm right, Joris, I think they're hoping to reinvest a lot of that money in a new training facility at the Luminous Arena. Is that right?
That is right. But I also have to say there's still a lot of discussions about the results, because I think I also mentioned it before in the podcast, and definitely to you guys, like, there's Genk is the last surviving NGO well, in that form of a company, but that's now disputed by the fiscal authorities, so they might have to give back from previous years still even 31 million, which puts things into perspective as well again, because the numbers looked really well, but they were also just the revenue numbers. The actual gains were around this sum of 30 million. But now we'll see how this goes, this whole argument with the fiscal authorities, if they can settle something. Yeah, just have to nuance some numbers. But at least there's no imminent danger anyway, even if they would have to pay it. But it would be a big blow, obviously. And yeah, indeed, since they're an NGO, they have to use the money that they get inside the club anyway. They have to invest it in the club. No one is getting anything from it outside the club or as owner. But they're trying to reinvest in training grounds and youth academy maybe. And there's this on the horizon, there are some stadium plans as well. I think they want to keep some of the money there. That's actually one of the issues. Like, can they keep it as an NGO? Can they keep some money aside for future? Well, since it stays in the club, I think that argument they still could counter. I don't know. That was probably a bit of all over the place. I don't know if that was a really good explanation, but just the takeaways to nuance these numbers. There's no imminent danger, but we'll have to see how good the numbers in the end are going to be.
I think that's the fascinating thing about all clubs' accounts, isn't it? Is, you know, kind of actually drilling down to get to the, you know, a little bit beyond the numbers to what fans really want to know, because the numbers themselves, you know, just as raw numbers, are often kind of quite boring, so breaking it down can be quite difficult sometimes. I think that's been one of the frustrating things for me, actually, when I was thinking about standards accounts. They're really poor showing in Europe is even more frustrating in light of the financial situation, because there's a revenue route that they desperately need at the moment because of that situation, and they've just been absolutely dismal. So they're not making any money from Europe, not only because fans aren't getting in, but because they're not winning any games, let alone drawing them, so there's nothing coming in there. So it's a loss-free revenue stream. So it's doubly frustrating, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just looking at their squad at Standard and comparing it to kind of like the players that Genk were able to sell in the past, you're looking at like your Sander Berg. He went for like 20 plus million. Leonardo Trossard, Ruslan Malinovsky, Mbwana Stabmata, easy for me to say, Joseph Aidoo. You've got all these players that are going for at least over 5 million. You're pushing some over 10 million into the 20s, as you did with Sander Berg. Where's that player in Standard that you think, okay, you know, that's the player you can make some money out of? I mean, maybe you could sell Raskin, 19-year-old, but he's not proven to be worth those high amounts of money yet. I guess one player maybe they had hopes of, I'm not sure, this is just me speculating, is Jackson Muleka. I feel like he was talked about, he's been exciting, people are watching him, they're trying to see, like, okay, has he got what it takes to adapt into European football from the African football setting? And him not being able to get on the pitch enough might even harm them, is harming them not just on the pitch, but also could be harming them financially, because they could look at him and hope that he had like a Victor Osimhen's type of season, where it's like, it's really good, he's scoring loads of goals, he gets sorts of interest, and they make some money out of him. Whereas I just don't think they're in that situation with him yet either. Then you said with Van Huysden, he is the player that they could make money out of, but with that injury, it's just not going to really happen to the level that they need it to, really, is it? So yeah, it's worrying, I think, because of the lack of obvious top-end talent in that squad that they could sell on. They really need to make Europe this season as well, like, and them being poor in Europe, like you just said, Scott, like, it's just like, yeah, it's like a perfect storm of terrible things, really, compared to Genk, who, yeah, that's quite exciting. And obviously their on-pitch performances have been improving as well. So yeah, what a contrast, I guess, between the two. Let's move on. There's plenty of other news to talk about. I don't know if one of you wanted to quickly discuss the coronavirus, the financial loss to the Pro League in general. There was some news that came out about that. I don't know if one of you wants to give a quick lowdown on that.
I think the big takeaway from that news, and it was the Pro League themselves, actually, who'd kind of shared this news. They released some figures which showed that the kind of overall income to the league was down in the region of kind of 50%. to what it would normally be, and that was between sort of March and September. So being another couple of months on now, there'll be another 10 or 15% down on that. So it's bad. And I suppose, you know, we need to look at getting fans back in again, and as many as possible, as quickly as possible. That's the only answer. I think most Pro League clubs make in the region, I think it's the figures about 29% of their revenue comes from match day revenue of different kinds, and that's quite a high figure. And I think Scotland, where I'm based, listeners will know I'm based in Scotland. Scotland has the highest percentage of revenue coming from match day gate receipts and match day income of any country in Europe, and I think Belgium's round about second on 29%. So it's easy to see how this is such a kind of dire problem. But that's the main takeaway, that there's been a reduction in around 50%, slightly above that now.
Yeah, and I guess it's not surprising, is it really, given everything that's going on? So fingers crossed they can start getting fans back in at some point, but who knows when that's going to be. If you want to give us a quick overview, very brief summary, I guess, of, if I'm going to pronounce this right, the Virton news that came out this week or last week as well.
Yeah, I kind of shared an article on my own Twitter account about the story to do with Virton, which some of you might have heard about. Virton, who were kind of forcibly relegated from Division 1B, and I've been fighting that case. Actually, the reasons behind it were apparently they didn't meet the licence, actually, so they were forcibly relegated, fought that, and in the last few days they've won their case, the upshot being that a court has ruled that they must be returned to 1B for next season. So now the Pro League have to kind of come back to the table and have a chat about how they're going to accommodate that. What makes it really interesting, I think, aside from the fact that there's a prospect of Virton returning to 1B, is that they're also filing for something in the region of €15 million in compensation, because obviously virtually their entire professional squad tore up their contracts when they were demoted because they didn't want to play amateur football. So they're now looking for that revenue to be returned so that they can build a squad that hopefully can compete if they are successfully returned. Conversations around that will kind of go back and forward for a while now, so we'll just need to see what happens with that, and we're definitely going to hear more about that. But the situation is, it looks like Virton are going to be coming back to 1B for next season.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Definitely one to keep an eye on as that progresses. I'll just quickly do an overview of the next piece and then we'll move on to some quite sad news. But so Cyril Dessers is the first Belgian player to join Common Goal. If you don't know what Common Goal is, it was the charity set up by Juan Mata of Manchester United that encourages professional footballers, players, coaches, the like, to donate at least 1% of their salaries to like a collective fund that supports other football charities around the world. Really cool to see Cyril Dessers being the first Belgian player to do, first footballer in Belgium to do this. Yeah, I hope he can kind of inspire some other guys to join it, because I think it's a really great cause and definitely something that should be encouraged for others to join in. Moving on from that, I'm sure many people have heard the really, really tragic news about the death of Anele Nkonga. He, the South African international, spent a lot of time at Genk. So I think the best person to speak about this would be Joris, but really, really sad. He died in a car crash in South Africa, I believe, as he was going to meet up or on the way to meet up with his new side. So he had been playing for Sundowns. He'd won a few titles with Sundowns over recent years, and he was about to join AmaZulu on loan. Really, really sad. Joris, why don't you talk about his time at Genk and kind of like how big of a player he was for Genk over the years he was there?
He really was. I will quickly jump over the ending. The ending was a bit sad. How they part ways was not how anyone really intended it. I think for the rest, for most part, he really was a player you could rely on. He was one of the best right backs in the league for years. At times, at his best, probably the best one as well. So that also shows in the trophies he's won. So he won 2 cups and a title, the penultimate title with Genk in 2011. He played almost 10 years for the club, and that's also show the importance might be even more shown. He's actually the foreign player with most played games for the team, and also the second most for overall. Only Thomas Buffel played more games for Genk than Anele Nkonka at this time of being. It's 279 appearances apparent in the end for Genk, and it's just sad. He always, even after this unfortunate ending at the club, which I won't go further too deep in. Like he always talked nicely about the club. Whenever you heard from him, he really still loved Genk. He was one of the first fans. You could see that on social media sometimes. Also, he stayed in touch with some fans as well. Even after, he actually, like Thomas Buffel had a gala game last year because indeed he was the in Genk for having a real good goodbye from Genk, and he actually flew the 11 hours from South Africa especially just for this exhibition game. I'm sorry, that shows how much he loved being in Genk. Yeah, it's really sad to hear. I don't know if people supporting other clubs will that already heard of it, they might not even know how it feels, like how important it was. I try to mention it now with the stats. He really was a key player. He didn't the only play at right back according to Football Qualities. He was a very multi-talented player that you could place in every place. So down from midfield down, I would say from defensive midfield down. And he would do everything he could on the pitch. Whenever he was on the pitch, he always gave his all and put in all the shifts needed. Just sad to hear. Yeah, and condolences to his friends and family. Of
no, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Like, definitely feeling for his like friends and family and stuff. And like, yeah, when you just look at his career, he just achieved so much. Like 50 caps for Bafana, got to play in the World Cup. Mm-hmm. In his home country, played in multiple African Cup of Nations. Yeah, and I don't think we should underestimate how difficult it is. Well, like how like it's just not, you don't really see South African players leave their domestic league that much to go and play abroad. Like it isn't a thing that they do as much as other African nations. So like your Senegals, your Cameroons, your Nigerias, like these players go and play in different countries. Quite often they'll come to Europe, whereas a lot of the South African national team will stay in South Africa and play in the South African Premier League because the wages are decent, the standard of football is quite good, like it's their home. So we can't underestimate how well he was able to come over and then play to such a high level, win trophies, and then go back and win even more trophies. Like, yeah, a massive loss, I can imagine, for South African football as well. South African football fans, I'm sure, will be mourning him. So yeah, definitely prayers and thoughts and like condolences with his family and stuff like that. It's just really sad. And he was only 33 years old, like far too young.
Yeah. And like his numbers has been taken out of rotation. So he used to wear number 16. That's out of rotation for Genk for now as a tribute. He will be forever our number 16.
It's just that, that's such a nice touch, I think. I know there's this very hard to react in these situations. Like, what can you do? But to do something like that, I think that's great from Genk. And yeah, I saw that lots of other, I know it's just social media, but it's nice to see other teams sending their condolences and stuff. I think that's a really nice touch. It's just, yeah, really, really sad news. Let's move on, I guess, to just quickly have a look at some upcoming fixtures before we finish this episode. So tonight, as of recording, we have Dortmund against Bruges. Just one word answers from you guys. Scott, do you think Bruges can beat Dortmund?
No.
Joris?
No.
Yeah, okay, it's a no for me as well.
so boring.
I know, but what can we do? We also have, in the Europa League, we have coming up LASK against Antwerp. Really, really big game for Antwerp. They could really do with a win here. Joris, do you think they'll win?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going for a draw, just to be boring. Liège against Poznan. Liège, we've spoken about just a minute ago. Yeah, Scott, Liège v Poznan. Do you see Liège finally getting a point in this competition?
Yes, a draw.
Joris?
Yes, all 3 points.
Ooh, bold, very bold. I think they're going to lose. I'm going for a Poznan win. And the final European game, we had Red Star against Ghent. Joris, do you see Ghent getting any points out of this one?
Yes, I'm very hopeful for the coefficient at least.
Yes, please, we could do with some coefficient points. Scott, what do you think?
That's another draw for me.
We're going to have an exciting week, I can see. We're really positive. We also have, obviously, as we just said, as of recording, we have Cercle Brugge against Muscom tomorrow. Let's just move on. Should be an interesting game, though, that we'll all be watching. Yeah, Joris, do you want to give us a game that you're looking forward to this weekend from the fixture list domestically?
Yes, of course. I know lately we've been talking a lot about the differences that are very close at the top of the table, but that recently, very recently, also changed at the bottom of the table where things were clear up to now. now, well, right before the recording, was on Bever won indeed their one of their postponed games. And now this weekend, Sint-Truiden is playing against Was aan Bever, which means that if Bever would win that game, then they would pass Sint-Truiden and get out of the relegation zone for the first time since, well, a while. They will still be in the danger zone, but if they would win it, then that would be that would really put some fight in this battle down. Let's also somehow hope that Moussico grabs some points somewhere to make it even more exciting. But also this might be indeed an important game for Muscat. I know they played really well yesterday, but they didn't take all the points that they deserved, which might prove them and him specifically costly already. Well, the weekend after, we'll see about that. Yeah. Sint-Truiden was on Bever, note it down.
Yeah, no, definitely an interesting game. Definitely, there's a lot riding on that one. Scott, what game are you looking forward to this weekend?
Well, listeners will know that, you know, my advice is always watch all of these games. But there's a couple that have kind of stuck out for me. Mechelen at home to Beerschot, that's guaranteed goals and guaranteed bags of excitement. So send the complaints to me when it finishes nil.
Yeah.
It won't happen because Beerschot are playing. And the other one is Cercle Bruges at home to Genk, which I think could be quite a tasty one as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going for the Friday night game, Eupen against Charleroi. Charleroi obviously off the top of the table now with Club Brugge back on top, but they're only on top by 1 point. Charleroi slipped down to fourth, 3 points off the title, off the top of the table, sorry. Only one win in their last five games, so they could really do with a win. But I think Eupen are a lot better than their position shows. I think they've been in a lot more games. They should have probably won a couple more games than they have. They're going to cause Charleroi some problems, and I think Charleroi could really do with a win, so I think that could be quite an interesting one. Quick run through the rest of the matches that are coming up. Port Mouscron have to go away to host Club Bruges, so yeah, that is Port Mouscron because they have to host someone. They're not very good at home either. Obviously, as we said, Mechelen Beerschot. We also got Ghent against Zulte Waregem, Anderlecht against Standard Liège, Kortrijk against Oostend, and then we finish it off on Monday with Antwerp against Leuven. We do have next week a couple of like catch-up matches, I guess we can call them. Really big one in Mouscron against Sint-Truiden. As Joris said, with Sint-Truiden playing against Vazlan, if they lose that, I'd be surprised if Muscat is still in charge for that. But if he is, he has to beat Mouscron.
I didn't even realize that they're lined up like that. Now, yes, then it's even a very, very important week for Sint-Truiden and Muscat.
Absolutely, yeah. Massive, massive week for them. On Wednesday, Charleroi hosts Vazlan Beveren. And then on Thursday, we have Eupen against Mechelen. So yeah, there are plenty of matches coming up. Pretty much every day from Friday there'll be a domestic game, so that's exciting for us for sure. Great, so I think that pretty much does it for this episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. As always, I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thanks once again to Scott and Joris for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you on.
You're welcome. I hope it won't take as long as this time.
It's been really, really good, and we'll see you all next week, so less of a wait.
Absolutely, yeah. And as always, if any of the listeners are interested or are freelancers in football or want to get into football freelancing, definitely sign up to Freelance Football Ops. Their subscription-based newsletter comes out every Monday, and they find jobs which cover writing, design, video, audio, just anything really in football media. Every single week you get that into your email inbox on Monday. Some really cool ones this week came through, quite a few at goal.com, which I know is quite a big site that people would be interested in writing for. So yeah, for more information, visit www.freelancefootballops.com or just search for Freelance Football Ops on Twitter. You can get in touch with the guys there. And yeah, so as the guy said, we'll be back next week with another episode. There won't be as long a wait, but in the meantime, if you haven't joined our podcast, please do give us a nice little review. We appreciate those. Good or bad, just so we can know we can improve on what we're doing well, that sort of stuff. Just really helps us shape these episodes to give you guys what you really want to hear. And obviously, we'd love to have some questions from you guys. Any sort of like questions about domestic stuff or just kind of more cultural Belgian football things that you want us to talk about, special episode ideas, any of that sort of stuff, please do let us know. You can get in touch with us on Twitter by tweeting at Belgian Podcast, or you can find the three of us and just attack us with your questions. So I am at BenJack94. Scott is at Scott_coin and Joris is at Joris_Beck, BECQ. Alternatively, if you would prefer not to use Twitter, you can email us belgianfootpodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, we hope to hear back from you. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you very soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.